Yaha he who Adhyaha the origin Bhagavan the Supreme Personality of Godhead Pumsam of all living entities Ishvaraha the Lord I in fact Bhavan you Kila indeed Lokasya of the universe Tamasa by the darkness of ignorance Andhasya blinded Chakshuhu I Suryaha the sun Iva like Uditaha risen. Translation, you are the Supreme Person, imagine speaking like this to your son. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the origin and Supreme Lord of all living entities. You have arisen to disseminate the rays of the sun in order to dissipate the darkness of the ignorance of the universe. Report by Śrīla Prabhupāda. Kapila Muni is accepted as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Here the word Adhyaha means the origin of all living entities, and Pumsam Ishvaraha. So we go Adhya Bhagavan Pumsam. So Pumsam. And Pumsam Ishvaraha. So Adhya Bhagavan Pumsam Ishvaraha. Pumsam Ishvaraha means the Lord, Ishvara, of the living entities. Ishvara Paramakrishna. Kapila Muni is the direct expansion of Krishna, who is the sun of spiritual knowledge. And as the sun dissipates the darkness of the universe, when the light of the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes down, it at once dissipates the darkness of Maya. We have our eyes, but without the light of the sun, our eyes are of no value. Similarly, without the light of the Supreme Lord, or without the divine grace of the spiritual master, one cannot see things as they are. The verse is, in the purport rather, speaking about dissipating the darkness of Maya as the effect of the sun. Continued into the next purport, so I'm going to read the next verse in purport. Text 10. Now be pleased, my Lord, to dispel my great delusion. Due to my feeling of false ego, I have been engaged by your Maya and have identified myself with the body and consequently bodily relations. Purport. The false ego of identifying one's body as oneself and of claiming things possessed in relationship with this body is called Maya. In Bhagavad Gita, 15th chapter, the Lord says, quote, I'm sitting in everyone's heart, and from me come everyone's remembrance and forgetfulness, unquote. Devahuti has stated that false identification of the body with the self and attachment for possessions in relation to the body are also under the direction of the Lord. Does this mean that the Lord discriminates by engaging one in his devotional service and another in sense gratification? The answer is no. If that were true, it would be an incongruity on the part of the Supreme Lord, but that is not the actual fact. As soon as the living entity forgets his real constitutional position of eternal servitorship to the Lord and wants instead to enjoy himself by sense gratification, he is captured by Maya. This capture by Maya is the consciousness of false identification with the body and attachment for the possessions of the body. These are the activities of Maya. And since Maya is also an agent of the Lord, it is indirect from the action of the Lord. So, before he said no, now he's saying yes. The Lord is merciful. If anyone wants to forget him and enjoy this material world, he gives him full facility to forget him. Not directly, but through the agency of his material potency. Therefore, since the material potency is the Lord's energy, indirectly, it is the Lord who gives the facility to forget him. Devahuti therefore said, quote, my engagement in sense gratification was also due to you. Not exactly blaming him, but now kindly get me free from this entanglement. Final paragraph. By the grace of the Lord, one is allowed to enjoy this material world, but when one is disgusted with material enjoyment and is frustrated, and when one sincerely surrenders unto the lotus feet of the Lord, then the Lord is so kind that he frees one from entanglement. Krishna says, therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, first of all, surrender, and then I will take charge of you and free you from all reactions of sinful activities. Sinful activities are those activities performed in forgetfulness of our relationship with him. In this material world, activities for material enjoyment, which are considered to be pious, are also sinful, or binding at least. For example, one sometimes gives something in charity to a needy person with the view of getting back the money 4 times increased. Giving with the purpose of gaining something is called charity in the mode of passion. Everything done here is done in the modes of material nature, and therefore all activities except service to the Lord are sinful. Because of sinful activities, we become attracted by the illusory, by the illusion of material attachment, and we think, I am this body. I think of the body as myself and bodily possessions as mine. Devahuti requested Lord Kapila to free her from the entanglement of false identification and false possession. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yirabhutale Svayam Rupa Gadaramayam Tadati Svapratantikam. Go back to Devahuti's first statement. Text number 7. We discussed this also yesterday, but her disdain for material sense gratification. The disdain for it is, she's saying, because it's just totally disturbing. But the disturbance is particularly towards her relationship with the Supreme. So she then honors him as one who has descended specifically to provide her the vision or the transcendental eye, sat chakshu, transcendental eye for seeing out of this position of darkness. And that good fortune has come to her now. many, many births of striving for spiritual life. So she's used this metaphor of transcendental eye. Then in this verse, she's using the metaphor of Surya, the sun. In the purport, Prabhupada is making it clear. We have eyes, but without the sun we can't see. Of course we have artificial light, but artificial light is also derived from the sun. Once Prabhupada was explaining like that. Whatever energy that we have that produces light, because light, heat and light are both properties of fire. If we have light, it's simply a transformation of the energy of the sun. Electrical energy is a transformation of the energy of the sun. Taking fossil fuel and burning it. Hydroelectric power is water that's come from the sea and it comes in the form of clouds and comes down as rain. Then you capture that energy in the form of... It's the energy of the sun. Makes electricity. Because electricity. So, in the indication in the verse of Bhagavad Gita, there's no need for sunlight or moonlight, which is from the sun, or electricity, which is from the sun. The light is from the sun. Light is a property of fire. So, even we have light from the sun. Excuse me, we have light. Without light, even we have the eye, the instrument for seeing, you can't see. It's both. To see, I need your transcendental eye, because my eyes are closed tightly due to ignorance. With knowledge, with the torchlight of knowledge, one can open one's eyes, giving transcendental vision. Jnana Chakshusha, or Shastra Chakshusha, seen through scripture, seen through transcendental knowledge. So what the other metaphor is also there, light. He's like the sun. Chakshu Surya Nivodita. As Nivodita is risen, as the sun rises to dissipate the darkness of the night, so you as an incarnation of the Lord have appeared in order to dissipate the darkness of Maya, darkness of illusion. And I accept you in that way. I'm considering myself very fortunate. You'll give me the eyes, you'll give me the light. That is, I'm fully dependent upon you. Which is what the position is. It's how, as Prabhupada is saying in the purport, without the light of the Supreme Lord, or without the divine grace of the spiritual master, one cannot see things as they are. Some people think otherwise. And to think otherwise is illusion. It's just not Krishna's system. We're dependent. And so, placing oneself voluntarily in the position of dependence, allows us, at least the possibility is there, to go on the other side of illusion, experience reality. People don't like to do that. They don't like to do that fundamentally because we've come to this material world with this rebellious spirit. We want to be independent from Krishna. Want to enjoy independently from Krishna. That's the reality. That's our condition. And so when it looks to surrender, it doesn't look good. It doesn't match that program. How can I enjoy independently from Krishna? If I surrender to the spiritual master, or if I surrender to Krishna, I blew it. I wish I wasn't good enough. I didn't make the team. I failed. And now I got to do this other thing. I got to surrender to Krishna. So it doesn't look good, but it is good. The other looks good, but it isn't good. Happiness and emotive ignorance looks good, but it isn't good. It's suffering in the beginning and suffering in the end. Happiness and emotive passion in the beginning looks good. Beginning seems to be happiness, and it's just suffering. And happiness and emotive goodness, it may look like it's difficult. In the end, it's nectar. So, the advice of Krishna is take that position of goodness. It may not look good, but it's nectar. And it leads one to the position of transcendence. So the next verse, text 10, she's asking her son, which is in itself quite amazing. She imagine her capacity. She not only has as her son the personality of Godhead, but she understands you're the personality of Godhead and you've come as my son just to deliver me. Imagine her state of consciousness, her qualification. And although she knows it, she's nonetheless submitting to him. It's still a fact, even she knows it, that she requires his mercy in order to get out of that condition of Maya. So she's identifying Maya specifically is this feeling of false ego. So then Prabhupada goes through it three times in the purport. What is this false ego and its byproduct? False ego is misidentification of the self with something that we're not. Misidentification with the self with something we're not. That's why it's a mistake. It's wrong. It's illusion. It's false ego. The most proximate thing is the body, both subtle and gross. Even if one can be detached from the gross body, then there's the subtle body, which is very dear to us. How we feel, what our thoughts are, very important to us. Even though it's not who we are, the material covering thoughts. And our material intelligence is very important because it secures sense gratification. Without material intelligence, we couldn't have enjoyment. But very dear to us. We very much prize our material intelligence. But to speak of, you know, the esteem it brings, although you're so intelligent. Subtle and gross enjoyment from this material intelligence. And of course, most subtle of all is the false ego itself. Our very misidentification. And it has a hold on us, and we have a hold on it. It's very dear to us. Our false ego. So through false ego, misidentification of the self with the body comes the next covering, the double whammy. It's what's connected to the body is mine. Because I'm this body, what comes from me is mine. So my work. And then with work, there's fruits of work, and then that's mine. Because this is me, that's mine. And with the fruits of work, then I can secure objects which are then mine. And I build this empire. That's I and mine. And of course, I and mine clash with other I and mine. Then, you know, it disturbs me. So I have some problems with my kingdom. And the world goes on. Disturbance. This is this term self-abandonment. It's just losing oneself with the I and my conceptions and la-la land. That's what my real interest is, my real identity is. I just left that and went into this other realm of Maya. So now, three times Prabhupada says, so I'll just repeat it again, there's the I and mind division of illusion. Explicitly false ego is the self identifying with something or not, but then immediately it's like boom, boom. It's immediate. There's mind. And we're very attached to mind as we're attached to false conception of self. And if we lose I and mind, what's left? Looks like nothing. And so if I surrender and let go of something, I'll have nothing. Or possibly I'll have nothing. And even Arjuna raises that question. What happens if one goes down the path of spiritual life? They leave this behind and go for that, but they don't make it. And they have nothing. They have nothing in this world, nothing in that world. They're bereft. Like a riven cloud. And Krishna's reply is, no, no. Whatever spiritual progress, that's permanent. And the other is not only impermanent, it's illusion. It's not who we are. And it's not what we possess, although it looks like that. And we're very convinced. The whole world around us reinforces that conviction. Except for, they'll go through the steps again, one who understands this is not enjoyment, this is suffering. So as Prabhupada's saying in the final purport, when one becomes disgusted and frustrated, the whole program isn't working right. Must be something wrong with the program. Not just how I'm playing the program. It's the program. It's the wrong program. I don't like this program anymore. That's a lower stage. Taking up, looking for the alternative because I'm frustrated. This is discussed in the first canto in relation to Dhritarashtra. The lower stage is just like, let go and seek the opposite of attachment. But it's a lower stage. And seeking spiritual enlightenment, because spiritual enlightenment is my real existence, whatever my feelings towards this on earth, this temporary world. My real, so it's a positive affirmation. And the topmost is one who is situated in their relationship with the personality of God and thereby is detached from this world. Just as a natural byproduct. Because there's strong attraction for the Supreme. That's a mature stage. Narottama. The topmost human being. But even just as Devahuti is describing here, in a humble way, we can assume that she's just frustrated with false ego. The expectations of happiness that always turn out into suffering. So, the philosophical portion here is her understanding that Maya is also under the Lord's control in a very interesting way. Prabhupada describes that darkness is nothing but the absence of light. And so it's there is darkness except for light. You bring light into darkness, and it's light instead of darkness. But without light, it's darkness. So an object casts a shadow. Of course, the object casting a shadow requires light. So there's some light, there's an object, and it's cat. You hold your hand up, and there's a shadow. Doesn't show so well, but there's a shadow. Without light, you don't have a shadow. Because it's just darkness. But with light, you have a shadow. So things that appear to be real, that's the shadow, is because there's light. Without light, you don't have the appearance of things to be real. You have just voidism. Or the appearance of voidism. So that's what voidism is, or Buddhism ultimately is voidism. There's not an acknowledgement of God, light. So there's no acknowledgement of even the shadow that's created by light. And so what is? Nothing. And just accept it. All there is nothing. And that nothingness also comes from nothing. And meaning of life is nothing. I'm nothing, you're nothing, and just realize that you're nothing and be happy. Be happy with nothing. And nothingness. Because that's reality, that's enlightenment. Impersonalism recognizes there is light, but that's all there is. And if one thinks that there is something besides light, well, that's false. My dear sir, where does this false come from if all there is light? Good question. They don't have an answer to it. Well, it doesn't exist. All there is light. It's certain. If I'm Brahman, but I just don't realize it, the thing that's impeding me from realizing it is illusion. And where does illusion rise from? Well, it doesn't exist. Because if you have illusion and light, then you have two things. You can't have two things if there's only one thing, so all there is light. Anyway, the devotional conception is, what's the relationship of illusion with God? And illusion is an energy of God. He permits it. That is, he permits forgetfulness of him. He empowers our free will if we misuse it. It's a relationship. And within that relationship, he allows us to forget that there's a relationship, but we can't even forget that there's a relationship without the relationship, without his empowering us. Then he gives, as he Prabhupada quotes from the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Sarvashacham Hridi Sani Vishto Mattak Smritir Gyanam Apohanam. Apohanam, this forgetfulness of Krishna, comes by the grace of Krishna. So indirectly, forgetfulness of the living entity is also under Krishna's control. And he who is even indirectly controlling it can remove that control, remove that influence. Only he can remove it because it's his energy. So she's requesting, my dear son, you're the Supreme Lord. Please remove this ignorance, this covering. And the covering, now going back again, it's twofold. Misidentification with the body and thinking of things from this body to be mine. It's a double lock. A lock that's locked. Even you break one, you're stuck with the other. And Krishna has the key. It's his lock. And it's invincible. Not just an advertisement. It's invincible. Can't break the security of those locks. Unless Krishna says okay. And Krishna will say okay if his representative says okay. And the representative is wanting to say okay, but that there's a condition that Krishna puts, the living entity has to surrender unto him. It's Krishna's system. He can't just, break the security code. Krishna sets the system up in that way. And as his representatives, the representatives are there to simply help the living entity come to the position of surrendering to Krishna, which is a position of happiness. So she's speaking to her son in a similar way as Arjuna is speaking to Krishna. When Arjuna is speaking to Krishna, he's speaking to Krishna like spiritual master. Prabhupada makes that very clear. Shishyastinam shadimam tvam prapanam. In the absence of being face to face with Krishna, or Devahuti in this case, face to face with Lord Kapila, then it's those who are representatives of Lord Kapila, or those who are representatives of Krishna. And that's the system, the spiritual master system, the disciplic succession system. And they're equally effective. If we have the qualification to have Krishna as our son, we could ask Krishna to please release us from material existence, to open our eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. Or the spiritual master, who is authorized or empowered by Krishna to function like that. So Devahuti therefore said, my engagement in sense gratification was also due to you. Means he permitted it, not he gets the blame for it. He sanctioned it. And now I'm asking for this other sanction. Please sanction, get me free from this entanglement. It's not a passive matter. Let me sit here in my rocking chair and please get me out of my entanglement. There's something that the servitor must do as well as what the master. The master is reciprocating with the servitor's disposition towards the master. But so she's pleading, please release me from this entanglement. And I'm ready to do what my part is. The first part is what's happening here. She's inquiring. And then when Kapila Deva gives her instruction, as well as knowledge so she can see, instruction so she can act according to life of transcendence. She definitely knows. So if we say Janma Karma Shame Divyam, we discussed this yesterday. It's not just information, it's another kind of knowing. And she knows it, but she's in that mood in relation to Lord Kapila Dev. That's like, say Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. They clearly understood who Lord Chaitanya was. Yet they were taking the position, please instruct me. And Lord Chaitanya did. That's part of knowing. When you know someone is in that position, it doesn't mean, okay, my business is done. See you later. Thanks a lot. I'm going back to Godhead. There's a relationship. It's an ongoing relationship. I mean, even in the spiritual world, an ongoing relationship of receiving. Right? The fact that she's asking. Yeah. Well, that's certainly part of her surrender, yeah.
So, the person is not going to reach that stage.
Devotee is. Yes.
And they say, okay, I've had a lot of this. Please, that is the surrender that.
Yeah, but just a qualified yes. A qualified yes is, as long as we're both agreeing that it's not passive, please deliver me. It's an active process. And there's things that she needs to do in service to what she hears. I'll clarify this way. There are two ideas of what surrender means. The monkey, the baby monkey, and the baby kitten. You've heard this example, right? You've seen a mother cat carry the baby kitten. What does she do? In her mouth, there's the soft part in the back of the neck of the baby kitten, and the mother picks up the baby kitten. And she walked with the baby kitten. And it's passive. The baby kitten is moved by the jaws of the mother. Boom. And then there's the baby monkey. What does the baby monkey do? Arms, legs, even tail wrapped around the mother. And the mother's moving while the baby is holding on to the mother. It's the second one, not the first one. That is our teaching. So I'm emphasizing like that. It's not passive. You may, in the course of time, meet persons who also believe in surrender, and they believe it's of the first kind. And that that's their faith, their conviction. I'm repeating the distinction. The other, our understanding is the other. It does matter what you do after you hear, after you receive mercy. You act accordingly. And it's an ongoing mood of surrender in an active way. Sanction and blame. Just go back to the first one. An atheist isn't blaming God because he's gone even further than blaming God. He's, you know, more offensive than the person who's blaming God. In that, you know, he didn't even exist. You know, if I said something unpleasant about a person, that's one thing. If I just really exist. It's more extreme, more radical. It's more offensive than causing some blame. Let's say a pious person who undergoes some great difficulty and then they have some issue with God. Why has he done this? God doesn't even exist. Let's just say a child in the family. Daddy, Mommy, why'd you do this? That's another thing. I'm out of here. You guys don't exist. As far as I'm concerned, you don't even exist. It's more extreme. So now back to the theist that has something bad happen. Your question was how to avoid blame by understanding how the whole system works. The system works in such a way that God doesn't want this difficulty for me. He's advising me just the opposite. Here's how to solve all your difficulties. I'm rebellious. I'm saying, no. No. We have one child in our congregation that's his favorite word. No. And in that mood of defiance, there's suffering. So, because I said no, now I'm dealing with this. I take responsibility for that. And I don't like the consequence, although I was liking the no. So I take responsibility. That's what, you know, for someone that has more capacity, that has more capacity for knowledge. A person that has less capacity for knowledge, it serves as a stick. The punishment is a stick. You know, if you sin, you're going to burn. You're going to suffer. I don't want to burn. I don't want to suffer. So they're not sin. But that person why are they making me burn? Why are they making me suffer? That blaming can easily happen. Mara, you have something?
Well, I just feel like it's clear. I still don't understand this part. Let's say if you are lacking the light, so light reading it to the moment. I don't know how to put this, but how is it that,
face the wrong direction? Can you just face the light when you get the light? Because with back, this is Prabhupada's example, with the back turned to the sun, what do you see? Shadow. So just turn to the sun. You'll see light. Well, how come you have to turn to the sun to see light? That's all. Just turn to the sun. You see the light. And it's not just an act, it's the heart. surrender unto me. You've taken your heart away. It's not like, you know, I don't like you anymore. It's not that. It's, you know, the remedy for the disease. The disease is the disease of the heart. Take your heart, direct it to the Supreme. There's light, because that's the condition of light. Why I can't have light? Well, you know, I'm over here doing my program. Because that program is darkness. It's the consequence of, it's the product of turning you back to light. Now, there'll be lots of things to do in the light. Saying things only wholesome without the darkness.
Yeah, but I want light over here.
Well, keep trying. And when you're ready, let me know. Yes?
In the spiritual world, the shadows, there are shadows in the spiritual
world. In the spiritual world, are there shadows? That's an interesting question. Well, everything is self-luminous. It's not just, you know, Krishna's luminous. Everything's self-luminous. But the answer to your question is yes, because the influence of Yoga Maya creates the sense of day and night. But not the kind of night that we have or the kind of shadow that we have. It's an internal potency shadow.
What's that?
It's like, you know, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says in the spiritual world there's no need of sunlight or moonlight or electricity. And yet we find descriptions of Krishna's pastimes based on apparent phases of time. His rasa dances on the full moon night of the Shravana season, and so on. There's a summer season, there's seasons. It's different. It's not due to the, you know, the movement of the sun in relation to the earth on its ecliptic orbit, and because of that there's winter and summer season and in between different seasons.
Relative.
It's, we discussed this in Gita Nagari. I had fun. Vibrama Vilas. Pastimes. Vilas means pastimes. Where the Lord makes seeming contradictions. Like, the unborn is born. And where there's no shadow for shadow. Where there's no sunlight, there's light. So on. So many things. By the internal potency, things happen. It defies material law.
Anything else?
Yeah. Whatever Krishna wants is what goes. Anything from the lady's side? Yeah? When something is causing a disturbance?
No.
The first part I couldn't get. More than a non-devotee. Okay. Oh. It very much depends upon the individual and as well as the circumstance and their relationship with Krishna. It may be simply purification. It may be a Krishna-imposed tribulation Just, you know, like, let's, you know, say, Kunti and the Pandavas. They had more than usual tribulation. There was their karma. But it depends on the devotee and their, or Prahlad Maharaj. More than usual tribulation. Big time tribulation. So, it depends. We can't just, you know, rubber stamp the thing and say that's what it is. It depends. It's all the relationship with Krishna. And what Krishna understands will assist that devotee either to overcome their attachment to material existence, so perhaps something severe is necessary. Perhaps. Perhaps it's just that they're... We were discussing in Gita Nagari, Sanatana Goswami, the tribulation that he had where Lord Chaitanya checkmated him. He wanted to give up his life, he wanted to go back to Vrindavan. He didn't, you know, everything he wanted to do, Lord Chaitanya didn't let him do. And he was bound by that affection for Lord Chaitanya, so he couldn't do anything outside of what Lord Chaitanya would say. He didn't want to be embraced by Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya would embrace him. But then he moved the source from his mind. Just like that. And it was for a different purpose. That tribulation was an enactment of the loving, the direct loving dealing with Sanatana Goswami. It depends on the circumstance. Someone's cell phone. Anything else? Maybe so? Yes. That's pretty standard. People keep trying. Yeah. That's it. What was the punchline? How do you go from that channel to the other channel? Well, the mode of passion is pretty standard. The mode of ignorance is standard also. One person's, you know, the consequence of passion is ignorance. Or the consequence of kamesha, krodesha. They follow. Rajo guna. Some Udbhava, by contacting the mode of passion, strong desire. And when strong desire is spoiled, you know, I don't get what I want, or I get what I want and I wasn't satisfied, and then it's gone, then it's frustration. But, you know, ignorance follows passion. They're you know, younger brother, older brother. One follows the other. They're born from the same mother. The mother is contact with the mode of passion, kami, protection. So that's the some persons have more passion and less ignorance. Some persons have more ignorance and less passion, but you know the combination go well together commonly. In my appreciation of Krishna's pastime, Jarasandha is like the archetype of passion. He keeps getting defeated, and he keeps going back and getting another army, trying again, and getting defeated. And the entire army, except he himself, is destroyed. And he goes back and gets another army. 21 times. The archetype of passion. And people do the same thing. Same thing. You know, economy crash. Maybe there's something wrong with the system. No, we just have to ramp up the system again. Go get the army and go do it again. So, very determined to enjoy. Very determined. You know, certainly some frustration. It's not happening. I just have to do it better, that's all. I have to figure out how to do it better. So, your question was, is that the standard for striving for happiness in the material world? It certainly is. But there's a mode of goodness standard also. It's just like, you know, in Kali Yuga, it's very hard to find. A person's life, voluntarily undergoing, reducing that, like, you know, tapa, tapo devyam. They like that mode of goodness. They like austerity. We're coming up next week is Pandava Nirjala Ekadasi. Some people think, oh no, Pandava. Some people think, they like. Prabhupada gives us example that as a kshatriya, he likes contest and combat, you know, chivalry. That's, and like kshatriya likes combat, a brahmana likes austerity. Jai! Austerity! Simplicity. And this person look at his simplicity and say, what's wrong with you? Where's the furniture? Where's the comfort? Sit on the floor, what's wrong with you? Eat on the floor, what's wrong with you people? We like it. Simplicity. Cleanliness. See your queen. And you know, we like it. I'm going to a passion program. There's something wrong with people. So anyway, and they like that. So that's happiness. That, those are the modes of nature. They're competing. All right? Address your question. If we don't fit into that, what do we do? That's right. That's right. Well, you know, there's the awakening of the motive. It's possible to awaken the mode of goodness without, like, intervention. It's just like a little common sense. So, you know, one person asked me recently, how do you get common sense? That's just, so I said, just associate with those who have common sense. At least you can understand what it is, for starters. A little common sense says, hey, there's something wrong here. That's what Devahuti's saying. There's something wrong here. And I'm not happy with it, with this wrong thing. But she knows what's wrong. It's false ego. I'm bugged by this attachment to false ego. I can't let go of it. And that's a word of Maya, to not let go of it, even I know what it is that's causing me trouble. Can you help me, please? That's the mercy. Something? Someone else? Okay, we're finished.